The time has come, my friends. Listen up. Let's get this big pre-season talking point sorted out, eh? And I expect plenty of pushback, so feel free to comment. You know the drill by now. I predict the team and drivers' championships. And as you can tell, this year trying to predict things is going to be tricky. And then there is, of course, the mid-season tweak regarding the measurements of engine compression ratios at temperature from August the 1st, which is essentially from the Dutch Grand Prix onward. However, it's too early to say how badly this new measurement could actually affect Mercedes-powered teams. It could be a little, it could be nothing, it could be a lot. And oh yeah, there could be another situation going on at the same time where the amount of power the battery could be outputting might be reduced after all, because according to outlets like The Race, the FIA instructed teams to test out different power outputs for the MGUK, just to try and make sure they could avoid maybe a PR nightmare in the first few races. And if that were to happen, the FIA and F1 might decide to massage that 350 kilowatt output, and the most commonly floated number instead of 350 would be 250 kilowatts. That's still double over what the MGUK was producing in 2025 and prior to that. And I actually will consider that in my predictions. Why? Well, come on. It's not the first time we've had a mid-season technical clarification. I mean, look what we had with the flexi wings just last year alone. But anyway, that's my disclaimer out of the way. So first off, we'll talk about the teams. And if you don't wish to hear about that and you would rather hear about the Drivers' Championship, you can skip over to this time over here. I'll see you over there. In 11th place, I've got Cadillac. Yeah, they should look more competent as the season goes on and the team settles itself into F1's rhythm, but it's still a debut year in a vicious development race. Experience will count here. Sure, they've got a skilled bunch of people from various different teams they've been able to accrue, since they do have a huge base within Silverstone, but at the same time, they all got to mesh together over the course of a season. And even if the FIA decides to bring down the power output of the battery, there is still a huge amount of data and experience the other teams still have in their pocket. It might help out Cadillac at least a little bit, but I really don't see it providing that transformative solution. Yes, they've got a stonkingly good Ferrari power unit, but that might be just something that prevents them from being woefully off the back of 10th place, Aston Martin. If the hybrid side of things does get simplified and the battery output does get reduced, since that is a major hurdle of the Honda power unit currently, that might stand to benefit Aston. They might be less far behind the likes of the midfield pack. There might be an opportunity for them to score some points come at the end of the year in big ways, you know, actual fifths and sixth places on occasion. But for the first half of the season, I'm expecting this to be absolutely brutal because, as I said in my video yesterday, they've got a huge mountain to climb. Half the amount of time and distance accrued than even Caddy and Williams got. That kind of stuff takes months to unwind, and the car was already months behind in development in the first place. They'll be spending this year playing catch-up. It's going to be a recovery season rather than a proper midfield assault, or maybe going for wins. Then in ninth, I've got Racing Bulls. They should be tidy, reliable, opportunistic, what have you. It would make them annoying to race against, but I don't think their ceiling is that high, because testing has hinted their long-run pace isn't quite where the upper midfield lives. Oh, they'll score, no doubt. But I do feel like they won't be able to match their sixth place in 2025. That was an absolutely stonkingly good year, led by the charge of Isaac Hadjar, which got him that promotion to Red Bull Racing, with Liam Lawson really coming in hot toward the end of the year. Then in eighth place, I've got Williams. They have got quite a few problems on their hands, but fortunately for them, unlike Aston, a lot of these problems are curable, mostly down to the fact that this car, which might be good and forgiving with cooling, is a bit of a chonky boy. But if they can tackle that over the course of the year, the pace should easily come roaring back. 0.3 seconds every 10 kilos, that could easily be a good chunk of change, which is what we saw with them before with the 2024 car when that was overweight. And a rebalance regarding to the hybrid system, it might provide them a little bit of extra optimization. They might be able to make use of the different suspension configuration at the front they've chosen to go for. Only Alpine and Cadillac have chosen to go the same way with pull rod suspension at the front. But yeah, they still need to make up for the fact they did miss out on the shakedown. They were able to do a lot of things with the virtual test time, but make no mistake, they really would have liked to have been at Barcelona. And they've also got to figure out why their concept isn't really working after all of these years of planning. Williams have been the most prepared team for this season, and yet we got that. Then in seventh place, I've got the likes of Audi. Now, if there's anybody that you could say was the most improved team throughout pre-season testing, I would say it's this team. And no, I am not being biased here. The data seems to be backing it up, as well as all the innovations they brought to the table. and for the fact they've actually produced the loudest power unit, and according to the speed traps, they produced one of the fastest engines. They've built a really usable platform during the testing period, and if there's less emphasis on the battery, it should reward stable drivability and disciplined development, which they have been doing. This will really suit them down to the ground, Binotto and Wheatley's team. This isn't a miracle pick or anything, it's just a solid upper midfield progression path. Then in 6th place, I've got the likes of Haas. Now, I will stress this out, is that the battle between 5th, 6th and 7th, I reckon, is going to be quite close. It's going to be a banger of a midfield competition, with Haas, I think, squarely placed in the middle. They could easily start off the season as the strongest midfield team, but the question mark that I've got for them is their development cycle. Whether or not F1's smallest team can be able to develop that VF26 over the course of 24 races, it really comes down to what Toyota's been cooking in terms of what they've been building in Cologne. Has it finally matured into something really productive? We'll have to wait and see. And then, as one of the healthier midfield packages, I've got Alpine. And something tells me they are onto something because of the fact that with their rear wing, which did turn many heads with it just collapsing in on itself, Audi have gone that direction. And if somebody's copying you within the midfield, you must be onto something now you've been dropping lots of time and resources not making engines anymore, albeit in a controversial way, which has gotten the mayor of Villechatillon up in arms. They could be a real points machine. And with the compression tweak impact still uncertain, I'm not going to be cruel to them. We'll have to wait and see whether or not they're absolutely nobbled, but if the hybrid side gets smoothed out at all, they should really stay competitive. They've put a lot of time into the chassis and the bodywork, but I do see Audi and Haas close enough to make 5th place a scrap. This is not going to be a cakewalk. Then, with a fairly considerable gap, I've got McLaren in 4th place. They should win races and score big, but they look a fraction behind the top 3 on average pace and development, and I've not really seen a miracle part from them yet. And if the FIA does come into the battery discussion, it should smooth some things out in terms of drivability, because McLaren have admitted that it's been a bit of a noodle scratcher in regards to energy management, but then of course there's the matter of papaya rules. They could, if they choose to keep up the pursuit of fairness, easily bleed points over the course of the season, which the likes of Red Bull, Mercedes and Ferrari will be more than happy to make use of. And if the team is not going to be easily defending their titles, it means they will have less leverage politically speaking. The drivers will push back a little more. And then in 3rd place, I have got Red Bull Racing. They still remain a considerable threat, even though this is the first year of them being a fully independent power unit supplier to themselves. They really exceeded expectations here. I think they've surprised even themselves with how good their powertrain is. They've proven they've been able to adapt rather handily, and Max Verstappen, even though he doesn't like this set of regulations, he considers them as one of the worst he's ever seen, he still can do stuff with them. And even if there is a reduction in battery power, they still should be able to have a very handy season. And of course, Max will be happier in that he won't have to do so much lifting and coasting and going down to first gear. I'm saying happier, not happy. But Red Bull's mission this year is to keep Max happy and to keep him with their team. Who is going to be the runner-up? I think it might be Mercedes. Because yes, I know, the whole engine compression ratio thing, it may not affect them. It may affect them quite a bit. That 2/10 thing that was supposedly mentioned. 10 or 15 horsepower, some other reports said. But I do think that they may be the ones to stand out and lose, especially if the whole energy management debate gets nerfed in some way, because they've been all about energy management. If that doesn't matter as much, they could easily stand to lose out. However, they are still title contenders. It's going to go down to the wire because they have shown strong testing mileage. They've shown some wobbles in reliability, but they have been able to come back on song and top the timesheets more often than not. Not to mention, they've shown time and time again, they're more than prepared for this regulation cycle than they were for the ground effect era, which is now why I've got first place pegged toward Ferrari. They have looked like the cleanest team throughout this entire process from shakedown to the final Bahraini test. And they've also been the ones to innovate the loudest. They cause the most noise and excitement. And if the FIA does their thing with the MGUK, this might shift value toward all-round car quality, and Ferrari appears well positioned there. If the season were to get messy with all of these technical adjustments, they could be the most stable title platform. Right, thanks for your patience. I know you might have skipped over the teams and gone straight to the drivers, but that's totally fine. The drivers' title is the spicier championship out of the two. So let's kick off with 22nd place, that being of the Cadillac of Sergio Perez. And no, this is no disrespect toward Checo. It might simply be down to the fact that this team is just brand new, and Checo has been out of Formula 1 for much longer than Valtteri Bottas. He might be still capable of brilliant racecraft days and be able to pull something out of the bag and exceed expectations in terms of strategy, as he was able to do in the Force India Racing Point days, outdrive the car and bring it into contention for a couple of really solid points, especially if other teams up front of them drop the ball. But the baseline operation and the learning curve is simply too much to bear for Cadillac right now. I really appreciate them for arriving and taking this sport seriously, but the amount of stuff that Sergio and Valtteri have to do this year is just simply too great. This is a huge technical change for even the experienced and established teams to get their head around. For Cadillac? Yeah, it's even harder. But I appreciate them for trying. And I am glad that Sergio is back in the sport. He will serve this team very, very well. But the fact that Mercedes had Valtteri Bottas on their books for 2025 as a development and third driver, that gives the Finn that little bit more of an edge. It's going to be really, really close. We're talking maybe, you know, a 12th instead of a 13th, or 1 point here instead of no points there. It's going to be very, very minimal differences, but it might be enough to make the difference between 21st and 22nd. A reduction of battery may simplify race management too, which plays into Valtteri's strength as a steady reference point. Then, in 20th, I've got Lance Stroll. His season should get better as Aston untangles the car, but it doesn't erase the reality that Lance lost out big time in testing. He only got 139 in. The driver who had the least amount of laps who wasn't from Aston Martin was Isaac Hadjar with 329. That's the difference here. That's the amount of experience that Lance was not able to get. He also really doesn't seem as determined as his teammate to lock in, and I really cannot imagine him sticking the course in this maybe being a learning period for Aston Martin for another couple of years. Can Stroll even be bothered to be at the back of the pack for that much longer and suffer the slings and arrows of public debate? And he's approaching 30. This patience might be wearing thin, and based on my video from yesterday, an exit plan for the Stroll family might be a little bit more on the cards than it was this time a couple of weeks ago. Then in 19th, it's going to be Fernando, and it's no question, he is going to be outpacing the Canadian by some margin, and the fact that he already knows what the problem is, he's looking forward to what could be done to improve the car because he knows what needs to be done. But the fact is though, it does need to be done. Honda needs to patch that engine pronto to have any hope of leapfrogging Cadillac and making some progress in finding out what exactly they have built. Yeah, in 2027, if Fernando sticks around, and Aston would do well to try and beg him to remain for at least one more year, they might be able to find out what's going on with their platform. But the sheer task at hand might make it difficult for Fernando to be able to do what he did in 2025 and bag P5s and P6s and people going, wow, how did he do that? And if the battery power is reduced, that might make Honda's efforts a little bit easier to try and come to fruition. But make no mistake, Aston Martin's poor winter, that's going to be a miracle to recover from, even to get back into within the midfield. I do not see a stunner. In 18th, I've got Arvid Lindblad. His upside's obvious. He can easily produce a few startling performances, this being his first year of F1. But over a full season, rookie inconsistency might still be possible. Not to mention that he did get into a fair few scrapes with the stewards in Formula 2, him causing quite a few collisions and getting a few raps on the wrist and the knuckles. I do think he will look fast very often, and he will prove Racing Bulls and Red Bull Racing right to promote him after only 1 year in Formula 2. But it is going to be very much a learning curve, but he can be very, very fortunate for the fact that he is not going to be dropped anytime soon. Yeah, he might be sweating a little bit if Nicholas Solov does really well in Formula 2. But we have to remember, the Red Bull framework these days is a lot more forgiving, which could easily serve Liam Lawson well, who I think will be 17th. He will bring steadier weekends than Lindblad, having learned through the school of hard knocks about what not to do when you're competing with other drivers and annoying their fan bases. Not to mention, his team has been known for capitalizing on chaos at the front, and that's why he was able to make use of that and get some solid points positions in Baku. That was incredible what he was able to do. I don't think he'll be troubling the midfield though on a regular basis, but he should do enough to be able to beat his teammate, and that is the minimum goal. If Liam can't beat Lindblad, then he might have a little bit of concern from Solov, especially if the Bulgarian goes on to win the F2 title in 2026. Then in 16th, I've got Gabriel Bortoleto. And you might be thinking, your other boy, only in 16th, Law, why is he this low? Well, the whole point of Audi is that they're taking things slow, and that it might not be a case of them absolutely dominating, but certainly being within the midfield itself. Overall drivability and confidence may matter more now that energy optimization stands to be nerfed potentially. He should score useful points, but Hülkenberg remains the safer all-season benchmark, at least for now. This is always a potential upset to be played here because last year he matched Nico in qualifying statistics and Nico is a quali merchant. I could easily be wrong. I want to be wrong. But 16th I think is fairly logical, with Alex Albon, the Thai driver from Williams, in 15th place. I think once Williams unlocks some of the pace in the car, Alex could easily have some standout weekends because he was able to do that in 2025. We all thought it would have been a miracle to get a Williams in the top 5, but look what he did on the first race of 2025. He gets the car in the top 5. He's really good at getting some lap time out of unstable and inconsistent packages, but the reality for the FW48 is that there are far too many hurdles to be able to overcome in the flyaway races alone. They may have a really good platform for the years to come, but right now, it's a really hefty platform they've got to try and shift up the order. They've got some really good lap time in Bahrain, but they are still behind. And I really do think Alex will not be able to emulate the best of the rest accolade he got last year. And I think this year, Carlos Sainz might get the better of him, albeit slightly, because if there is any driver who will prove to be useful than gold in terms of development, it's Carlos Sainz, because as I showed you in that one video, he can talk your ear off, and you want drivers in 2026 to talk your ear off to try and get to the root of problems. Yes, Sainz has expressed his frustration in Williams not producing the goods after having so much time to prepare. They were preparing for this year, but for those thinking that he's going to abandon them at the first sign of trouble, think again, because he did cite the whole thing with McLaren having a dip, but then look what they went on to do. Within a couple of years, they were champions. So Vowles has said 2028 is when everything will come together. This has proven to be an even bigger hurdle than they even anticipated. But I do think Carlos will be able to get that little bit more than Albon. It'll be close, but I do not think either driver will be looking for the exit anytime soon. Sainz getting the points edge here due to the fact that he'll be a little bit more consistent, because that was what we saw in the back end of last season. Then in 13th, I have got Franco Colapinto. He should have a lively season with a mix of eye-catching performances and fewer rough weekends than he had last season, after him having his first proper pre-season campaign. And the car does look good enough to keep him in the points conversation quite often. I still keep him behind Gasly though, because of the fact that points will come a little bit more consistently to the Frenchman, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Franco won't have his moments. He could have weekends where he is the better driver, because that's exactly what we saw last season. There were weekends when Pierre just looked really slow and Franco looked the feistier of the two. This should be a year which will keep Flavio happy and keep Franco in the seat for 2027. Then Ocon in 12th. In a capable midfield car, he's a very reliable source of points, and this Haas project looks competent enough to give him a lot of scoring opportunities, provided they get their race execution sorted properly. One of the biggest things that was going against Esteban was qualifying execution, which saw him right down near the bottom due to timing mishaps, and he had to be the mule in terms of tyres, which then went on to benefit Behrman that little bit more. But I do see Ocon being able to score a little bit more often and having a better time of it, and also proving to the team that he is worthy of having a contract extension and keeping Jack Doohan away from his seat. Therefore, I do see Oliver Behrman pipping him by just one position, him being in P11. And we saw him in P11 quite a lot in 2025, so this only makes natural sense. He's also one of the most entertaining midfield stories, because it'll be a case of will they, won't they, regarding Ferrari giving him a call, depending on what happens with their mainline drivers, whether or not Lewis or Charles decide to move on. But given what we saw from Ferrari in testing, that is not likely. There is Jack Doohan waiting in the wings, there's Vafa Kamara in Formula 2, and if he dominates, he is going to be in that conversation for the reserve driver role, so there might be added pressure in that sense too. But he has proven to be able to punch above his weight and have some good Sundays. But at the same time, there is something to consider, especially in the opening few races. He is only 2 penalty points away from a race ban, and that can easily derail an opening campaign, especially when I think Haas might be on course to get some really good points at the beginning of the year and keep that momentum going, albeit other ones catching up. So yeah, Oliver does need to keep it clean and not incur the wrath of the stewards, especially in terms of free practice foibles, which he did really fall foul of in Monaco and Silverstone especially. Silverstone, the most galling one, where he'd gone into Q3, but then fell out of Q3 because of that 10 place penalty grid drop. But yeah, the Haas package still is something I think he will be troubling the front order on occasion. Then in 10th place, I've got the other Alpine in Pierre Gasly. because simply he is the natural points magnet. He is the anchor of that team, having stuck it out from when they were at the height of their works power influence to now them being customers. He's been there throughout this massive change. He also tends to maximize good machinery efficiently, turning top 10 opportunities into reality, especially with what he was able to do last year at the Belgian Grand Prix. A power circuit in an Alpine Renault-powered? What? And a battery cap might help make his races less chaotic, which will serve to strengthen his consistency. But he may not have enough car to pull off major upsets like podiums, like in 2024 or 2023. There's too many ahead of him and Alpine who will have a stronger case for that. And then, in terms of midfield, the best of the rest, I reckon it will be Nico Hülkenberg in P9. He is built for this kind of a season. And he'll be especially motivated by that his contract says that for every single point he is able to accrue, he will get a €50,000 bonus. You know, that same thing that Kimi Raikkonen got at Lotus and nearly bankrupted them. And I think it's quite safe to say that in the second phase of Hülkenberg's career, for Haas and for Sauber, he has proven to be a remarkable reference driver. He is very much midfield furniture, but quite frankly, for Audi, that's absolutely perfect. He doesn't cost an arm and a leg. He's constantly reliable. He's actually quite zesty and interesting. Everybody likes him. He was in the top 10 equation, getting his podium last year when Audi weren't fully firing on all cylinders. Just imagine what they can do this year if they continue to improve as much as they were doing in pre-season testing. And not to mention if Nico can actually get into Q2 and Q3 more equally. Because you've got to admit, he had to do many burns from the stern after Sauber dropped the ball in terms of timings, them really screwing the pooch on that one. Hopefully they don't do that as much in 2026. Then in 8th place, I've got Isa Kajar. You might be thinking I'm being cruel here that he might not be competitive to be up in the top 5, but considering where Yuki Tsunoda finished last year, and where Liam Lawson finished in his first two races with Red Bull Racing, this is actually quite optimistic, and I reckon that Red Bull will provide him a fair few opportunities to be able to come up with the goods and get a couple of podiums, maybe even a cheeky win, at least having a strong points total, getting into triple figures for the first time. Especially if they can guarantee that the second seat curse is indeed a thing of the past. It really helps that Horner isn't around, Marco isn't around. I don't think the Red Bull Junior team will be nearly as cutthroat as they were before. Yeah, he'll have rookie dips and his lap tally from testing is the lowest out of anyone who isn't Fernando or Lance, but the car should carry him to a very healthy first season. And it really helps that Laurent Mekies has said that this is a building year, and they're giving him their full support. I don't think the Frenchman has anything to worry about regarding his job security. Then, in P7, I got Lando Norris. Yeah, he'll be fast all year and McLaren should still win races. This positioning still looks low to some of you, because the top end, you just gotta look at it. It's stacked. And the points get brutal, especially since it's become very, very clear that for the majority of the points, it's gonna be like it was in 2024, where you'll be lucky to get into the top 8 if you're not part of the top 4 teams. And I think that right now, McLaren just don't have the platform that's screaming out to me that it's the best of the best, even if they get up to having the matching spec of Mercedes in terms of powertrain. I've just not seen anything that's made me excited for them. At least not yet. Even in 2024, it took one major upgrade in Miami to really transform their season. That might come along in due course, but it really depends on when it actually comes, if it comes at all. And if the MGUK does get nobbled down to 250 kilowatts, that might help McLaren out a little in terms of figuring out a solution. But I'm really not sure where Lando is in regards to these cars, because one minute he says he likes them, then he says he doesn't like them, and he was just testing out how the audience would react. Then all the chicanery about, has he broken up with his girlfriend? Oh, no way, he hasn't. He's been basically doing a lot of rage baiting and trolling the community lately, meaning that it's really hard to tell where he stands with these new cars. Does he like them or does he not? So therefore, that ambiguity doesn't give me the most amount of confidence that he's managed to get his head around them, at least at the beginning, which might then serve an opportunity for Oscar Piastri to get the better of him. And in a situation where I think McLaren might not be the big bods that they were in 2025, that might give him a little bit of a leg in. Also, Oscar's racecraft and composure tends to hold up when the cars change underneath the drivers. And Lando has also said that he expects Oscar to bother him even more in 2026. It also really helps that the cars this year really need to have smooth drivers at the helm. And Oscar is smooth. But sometimes, as we saw in late 2025, he was too smooth. But over a full season, that may pay off. He will score heavily, he'll win races, he'll be in the top 6 I think for the entire season if McLaren falls short of the top 3 teams. Simply for the fact that papaya rules are there. Yeah, Andrea Stella has said they'll be more streamlined. They do not want to have the same mistakes. But there might be a crunch time if McLaren have a really good weekend where they are the fastest team or are really in contention for a podium or even the win, where they might actually see one driver not realize their full potential. They might leave something on the table. And then this might really get you a little bit shocked. I've got in fifth place, George Russell. Really? George? You were talking up not that long ago. You were on the Mercedes bandwagon when they released the W17. What's changed since? Well, I've had some time to think about it, and we've seen in testing, George has really not lit my fire. It might be just down to the fact that this could easily be a five-way title decider, and George might simply fall down in Abu Dhabi for one reason or another. Or it could be down to some intra-team chicanery, because as we'll talk about in a moment, his young Italian Verstappen teammate might prove to be a really major fly in his ointment, because we already saw it in 2025. Mercedes should still be one of the strongest teams, even if the compression ratio tweak comes into effect, because we don't know how badly it will affect them. But I do think for the fact that Ferrari's just looking really, really solid right now, Verstappen's absolutely ruthless and will be out to gun George down, and Kimi absolutely liking these rules, thinking them like speed chess, I don't think it's going to be that cut and dry. It could be close. He might be in contention all the way to the end, but he might fall down at the very last minute, like Oscar fell down within the last few races of 2025. And in fourth place, I've got his former Mercedes teammate, Lewis Hamilton. No, I don't think he's going to be in contention for his eighth world title. I think his teammates simply got too much of an edge and is really loving this even more than the Brit. He will be in contention for pole positions. He will be on the podium on several occasions. He'll also, I think, bag a couple of wins. He'll just look a lot more settled in with a car that seems to be more dialed in and something he really likes, even though it's not perfect. He also doesn't need to dominate like Leclerc. He doesn't need to prove anything. He just needs to have a good time. And if he can have a good time, I don't see him leaving this year. And hey, even if he doesn't get a driver's title, if he can help Ferrari win a constructor's title, ending a huge drought in terms of silverware, he'll be part of Ferrari's history anyway, and that'll be more than enough for him. So yeah, I don't see Hamilton giving up anytime soon. I think he's way too fired up, and I certainly think he will be in contention for a top five finish and be in the hunt for a long time. Then in third place, I've got his successor at Mercedes, Kimi Antonelli. Mercedes, as I said with George, they have a title-level car, and his adaptation curve, as we saw at the back end of 2025, was absolutely incredible. And it could be even better because he's a data sponge. His likening of F1 to speed chess, as I mentioned earlier, told me everything I needed to know. He is going to thrive in this era of F1. Yeah, I do think third is pretty bold, but I certainly think it matches the upside of Mercedes, their potential, as well as his own upside. He is in his second year, and yes, he had a torrid time of it in 2025 in the middle part of it, but at the beginning and the end of it, it was absolutely remarkable. He's already given George headaches in terms of where does he stand in the pecking order, and Toto Wolff absolutely loves the pants off Antonelli. He wants that guy, the Italian, around for the long term. And this might be an absolute attempt for him to be in the championship contention conversation. I don't think he's going to be winning the championship. That might be a fairy tale event if it did happen, but he certainly will be bagging his first win this year, if not quite a few. And I do think there will be some argy-bargy between him and George. I don't think it's going to be smiles and sunshine anymore, as in the teacher and the pupil. It's certainly going to be a moment where there are going to be some dramatic radio conversations, and Toto will be telling both of them to pack it in, albeit being a little bit more coddling towards the Italian. It's not going to be plain sailing for either of them, but I do think Kimi might just get the slight edge. Then you'd be wanting to know, who's the runner-up? Well, if the maths are telling you anything, it's going to be Max Verstappen, because he's the ultimate pressure source for any title fight. And if you can read between the lines of what I'm getting at here, we might have a 2022 Part 2. Even if he reckons this era of F1 is his worst, Red Bull should remain close enough to Ferrari and Mercedes that his consistency keeps him in the hunt all year. Even if the FIA do things with the MGUK side of things, expect Max to make the most of it and not really be bothered at all. Because we saw him charge from absolutely nowhere, 100 points plus behind when the car was absolutely nowhere, and then suddenly came somewhere again. If it's somewhere throughout the entire 24-race campaign, come on, he's going to be a championship contender. And he will be battling against the likes of my pick, Charles Leclerc, because he's the most coherent champion pick out of all of them, because we've seen him really look happy with this car. And any discussion of him leaving Ferrari now, all the way through his 2029 contract, oh, that's dead. Absolutely dead, based on preseason testing alone. He's got the strongest platform and he looks really comfortable with the car. That final day six performance where he got that car into the 1 minute 31s, that time good enough for Q2 in Bahraini qualifying last year, by the way, goes to show that he's on it. He's on that car. He's at one with it, and he's surely relieved that the SF25 is now a distant memory. That was a really painful year, which made him do a lot of soul searching. And now he's found that soul, he's found that spark, and there might be an opportunity for him to have some proper battles with Max Verstappen. That's going to make him so happy. It's going to fire him up. It's going to motivate him. It's going to motivate Lewis. It's going to motivate Fred. It's going to motivate the Tifosi. It's going to motivate the country of Italy. It's going to be a really big thing for Formula One to see Charles, one of the most influential drivers on the grid, if not the entire sporting map, be happy. He should have the pace to win very often, and Ferrari, if they can keep on this innovation train, especially with that rear wing being approved by the FIA, it's not illegal, they will be on song to get some silverware for the first time since 2008. And I think that will happen regardless of any changes to the rules, be it a reduction in battery power or the compression ratio tweak. I think Ferrari's got a really solid package, and if they get their Spec B car out sometime soon, it might be even mightier. The consensus seems to be it's Mercedes versus Ferrari, with Red Bull poking their noses in on occasion. So here we have it. You can screen cap this and bring it back to my attention later, but I feel fairly confident with this lineup given how clueless we are regarding 2026. We'll be back in the new year to go over this and find out whether or not I can actually beat my score from 2025. It might not be that hard to do. But for now, I believe that this video over here will be very much suited to your taste since you got this far in the video. I'll see you over there.